Good morning. Thanks so much for the opportunity of sharing with you today. I think I said last time I was here, I always find it a bit intimidating coming to Mount Hawthorn Community Church, not because of the personalities of anyone here, but because the kind of theme that I end up talking about, a tear-related theme when it comes to God and justice and poverty and those kinds of things, there's a lot of knowledge in this room, and often I feel like way more than I have. So let me just sort of start by saying these are my kind of humble reflections on that theme, and I'm not pretending to sort of know everything there is to know about that. But thank you very much for the opportunity of sharing with you. For those of you who, I'm sure just about everyone in this room is probably very familiar with Tear Australia, but in case there's someone who isn't, let me give a brief snapshot of who we are. We describe ourselves as a Christian relief, development and advocacy agency, and that's a bit of a mouthful, I know, but basically what we do, we support projects in developing countries around the world where local Christian people are working with the poorest of the poor in their communities, helping them to develop a better future, the kind of future that we believe God envisages for every person living on this planet. And in March of this year, as I mentioned in the children's talk, in March of this year, I had the opportunity of spending a couple of weeks in Zimbabwe. I don't travel a lot in my role, but occasionally I get to go and see some of the projects that TIA supports. And I got to travel to Zimbabwe earlier this year. And so what I'd like to do this morning is just share with you a couple of stories from Zimbabwe and then use those as a springboard for thinking about what God's mission in the world is and how he might be calling us to be involved in that. So let me get down to Zimbabwe and tell you a bit about that. While I was in Zimbabwe, we've got five tier partners over there who are doing development work. And as I travelled around the country looking at those various projects, I became increasingly encouraged and excited by what I was seeing. And as I was looking at these projects, I had this quote that kept coming to mind. And the quote was from C.S. Lewis. And C.S. Lewis, of course, wrote The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe and a whole heap of other books. He's a prolific Christian writer, and the quote of his that kept coming to mind as I looked at these projects was this: Christianity is the story of how the rightful king has landed, you might say, in disguise, and is calling us all to take part in his great campaign of sabotage. Now, initially, you might read that quote and kind of think, well, hang on, Christianity and sabotage, not really used to hearing those two words go together. What's C.S. Lewis getting at there? It's a bit strong, isn't it? But I have to say this, the more I read the Bible and the more I reflect on the kinds of things I saw in Zimbabwe, the more I'm convinced that C.S. Lewis was actually onto something. You see, the Bible tells us, and look, you don't really need the Bible to tell you this, just look around the world and see for yourself, read the paper, look at the news, but the Bible tells us that the world is not as it should be. Things are bent out of shape. The world is busted. The world as God created it is meant to be fair. There's meant to be justice. People are meant to live in harmony with their neighbour, within themselves, with God, with the environment. That's how things are meant to be. That concept of shalom, peace with God, self, neighbour and the land. That's how things are meant to be. And yet it's not like that. As we look around the world, we see that it isn't fair and it isn't just. You know, 20% of the world's population use about 80% of its resources. Up to 25,000 kids die every day due to the effects of poverty. We see greed. We see our environment being polluted. And in many places around the world, in cities, in suburbs, and sometimes even in our own homes, there's no peace. The world is not as it should be. It's been corrupted by evil. And it's into this exact situation, a broken world, a world in turmoil, that Jesus comes and presents himself as the alternative. And as you look at the stories of Jesus' life, as you read through the Gospels, you see him presenting an alternative. In effect, he says, I'm the real king of this place, and let me tell you how things should be. There should be justice. There should be compassion. There should be love and harmony between people and God, between people and their neighbours, and between people and the earth. That's how things should be. But this is more than just a nice vision for the future. This is way more than just pie in the sky when you die kind of stuff. Jesus actually declares that his new world, his recreated or restored world, starts now with people who choose to live his way. Now, please don't mishear me. I'm not suggesting, and I don't think for a moment that we can somehow create heaven on earth through our own efforts. That's kind of enlightenment thinking, not gospel thinking. The Bible tells us that God will complete his mission in his own timing and in his own miraculous way. And you can read through Romans chapter 8 and Colossians 1 verses 15 to 20, which was read before, bring that out. It makes it clear that Jesus is the rightful ruler of all, and eventually everything will be brought under his good and just rule. It's starting now, but it will be finished later. This is God's mission of restoration, of bringing all things under the lordship or rule of Jesus. It's his plan, but he invites us in on it. I mean, think of how Jesus taught his disciples to pray. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come. Your will be done where? On earth as it is in heaven. Following Jesus is intensely, intensely practical. Christianity is the story of how the rightful king has landed, you might say in disguise, and is calling us all to take part in his great campaign of sabotage. So let me bring it back to our partners in Zimbabwe, because I think what I saw in that country was more than just good development work. I think what I saw were actually God-inspired acts of sabotage. So let me describe two to you this morning. One of the unique experiences I had in Zimbabwe was I got to go to a prison, and fortunately it was just as a visitor. It was in the district of Inkai, which is out of Bulawayo in the southern part of Zimbabwe. It's about 3 hours out of Bulawayo down this dusty four-wheel drive track. And let me just say, prison isn't somewhere you want to be in Australia, obviously, but you really don't want to be in prison in Zimbabwe. A number of exposés have been done in recent years on conditions in prisons in that country, and what they've found has been absolutely horrific. They've found prison cells so crowded that people need to take turns standing while other people sleep. Often there's not enough water. There's certainly not enough water for people to wash, and so there's health ramifications to that. Often there's not enough water for people to drink. Food is scarce, and sometimes there's no food at all. People regularly die from the conditions in Zimbabwean prisons. And so it was with that in mind that one of Tia's partners in that part of Zimbabwe called HEFO, which stands for Health, Education and Farming Organisation, they decided to get permission to start a project within the walls of the Inkai prison. And what they started was a minimum tillage or an organic farming program within the prison. And when we drove to the prison to have a look at it, we were travelling with a local pastor from the region called Ananiah, who had started HEFO and started this program. We rocked up to the prison gates, and there was a young guy standing at the gate, really 18, 19-year-old with this machine gun, and we were the only two, my tier colleague and I were the only two white guys in this heavily restricted area, and so he was very nervous about us being there, wondering if we were there to, who knows why he thought we were there, but he didn't want us there and he wasn't going to let us pass the gate, and Ananiah's arguing with him about whether or not we're going to go in, and I'm thinking, Ananiah, the guy's got a machine gun, he wins the argument, let's just get in the car and go. And then at that point, the commander of the prison saw Ananiah from across the compound, and this big smile broke out his face and he waved and he came running over, shook our hands warmly, and for the next 45 minutes he took us on a tour around the compound of the prison, the gardens, which had effectively been turned into one gigantic veggie garden. So I've got a few photos there. They'd taken any spare space around the prison and they'd turned them into veggie patches. And so what they did was they provided, there was two reasons for the project. Firstly, it was to provide food for the prisoners while they were in prison. And secondly, they wanted to teach them farming techniques that would be useful when they got out. Most of them were in prison because they'd had to steal food. And it was hard to farm in that area, but there were these organic farming techniques that they were having huge success with. So they taught these guys how to do it. They were teaching the prison guards and the prisoners. So HEFO provided the expertise. They would come in and would teach them how to do it. And they also provided a well, which they had also been doing outside the prison. And the results were amazing. They had more food than they could eat within the prison, and so they were selling it to the surrounding area and putting the funds back into the prison to improve the conditions. They had 4 tonne of maize that was being sent off to be ground. It really was amazing. And in fact, that prison has become a model for the whole country, and they're sending prison commanders from other parts of Zimbabwe down to look and see what they're doing. It was an incredible thing to see. Every spare patch had been taken over with this organic farming plots. It really was amazing. So that was a very, very encouraging thing to see. Another God-inspired act of sabotage that I saw while I was in Zimbabwe was in the border town of Mutare, which is on the border of Zimbabwe and Mozambique. And what we saw there was what I was describing to the children earlier. It was a school that was open for deaf children and their families to teach them how to communicate with each other. And the organisation was called Nzeve, and they were teaching deaf children and their families how to speak sign language. And I want to show you a brief clip I made from that. There's a lady by the name of Libby Foster who started in Nzeve. She's an English woman. They've been there since 83, I think. And I said to her, her husband's a doctor, that's why they were there, but I said, why did Nzeve start? And she said, well, one of the things we noticed is that the families of deaf children were not happy families. There was conflict because they couldn't communicate within their families and frustration. And so I thought, what are you going to do about this? And they started this work with deaf children and their families. And just before I show this short 3-minute clip, the other thing to bear in mind, and I'd never thought of this ramification of poverty, but the deaf children at the school, by far the majority of them, was 96% or something that high, weren't born deaf. They became deaf because of infections or illnesses that, you know, here in Australia would be treated very readily and just wouldn't become an issue. So these were children out in a rural area, and there was a lot of deaf children that were living there. So it was a big problem, one that I'd never even thought of. So you learn something new every time. I'll just show you this clip.
We started in Zale in Mutare in Zimbabwe when we realised the need for fatherless to be able to help their young deaf children. It's very critical for children to learn language before they are 6 years old. So we wanted to try and find young deaf children, and then we were able to teach the parents and the children how to use visual language, Zimbabwe sign language, when they were too deaf to learn to speak. So we now have a centre where we invite parents and young deaf children to come, and we teach the parents sign language, and the children are doing ordinary preschool activities, but with an emphasis on the visual learning and on learning sign language. So when the children come, they generally have a lot of pointing and pulling of people to try and explain what they want. But with time, they're able to explain themselves through using signs. And in this way, they're learning a more formal language, which helps them to develop their learning skills, their understanding of the world, and just getting ready to go to school. So we then, the children who graduate from Nzeve, feed into the formal school system. The government has provided special classes for deaf children in 15 schools in our province of Manicaland. And the children from Nzeve graduate and go to these special classes, and then we support the teachers in those special classes. Often they have very few resources, they've had very little training to teach deaf children, and sometimes no experience when they get thrown into a class of deaf children. So we provide workshops and ongoing support for the teachers so that they can improve their teaching skills and the way they're helping the children and their families in the schools. Then we also started a youth project here when we realised that most of the school leavers were just hanging around. Employment is a real problem for hearing people in Zimbabwe, so the deaf are right at the back of the queue and very rarely get offered jobs. So we started a training project where we're trying to teach vocational skills, woodwork, building, gardening, farming skills, as well as getting education for the youth in health, HIV and AIDS, relationships, work ethics and business skills as well. All these things we try to include to give them an all-round preparation for life.
Okay, so that's Nzeve. Another really interesting thing that they were doing was trying to work out how do you share the gospel with people who have never been able to speak or read. And so one of the things they do is they hold devotions in the morning that people can go to. So I went and sat in on the devotion series they were doing with their young adults. And what they were doing is they were doing chronological Bible storytelling. So they would act out a Bible story, and then they would talk about what that might have meant in its original context and what that might mean for us now. So it was really very creative, the work that they were doing there. So Christianity, the story of how the rightful king has landed, you might say, in disguise, and is calling us all to take part in his great campaign of sabotage. As I begin to wrap up what I'm going to say this morning, let me just say this. The scope of the damage caused by sin, wrongdoing, whatever label you want to put on it, and the Greek word for sin is hamartia or hamartia, and basically it means to miss the mark. So sin is to miss the mark. Things aren't as they should be. That the scope of the damage caused by sin, the way we've missed the mark as God's creation, is huge, and it's created some massive problems that are there for all of us to see. That's the bad news. But the good news is that God's plan of salvation is equally comprehensive. God is concerned with every aspect of our lives, the spiritual, the emotional, the physical, all of it is of a great concern to God, who loves us and all of his creation. Do you remember who Jesus was mistaken for by the first people to see him when he rose from the dead? It was a gardener. Do you remember that? Which in a way is entirely appropriate, because that's what he is. The New Testament theologian Tom Wright describes Jesus as a cosmic gardener, tending to a new creation. The old has been defeated on the cross and the new has begun. And what a privilege for us to play a small part in the new, the kingdom of God. And that's our mission as God's people, to be involved in what he is doing in the world. And there are lots of different parts to be played when it comes to participating in the new. And that's what I think just makes it so exciting for everyone in this room. No matter what your talents, your skills, your abilities, there's a part for you to play in what God is doing in the world. And I just think that's one of the most exciting and amazing things about being a follower of Jesus and being part of his kingdom, the work he is doing in the world, his good creation. And I'll share with you this morning just a couple of examples of the gardening that Tia is involved in the world. One literally is gardening, but other things like working with deaf children. We work in countries all over the world. So if you don't know much about Tia, and I know there was the gift catalogue over there, and thanks for plugging that and supporting that, but I've put some little magazines over on the table. If you don't know much about Tia and you'd like to know more, feel free to grab one of those and have a bit of a flick through and see about the kind of work that Tia is doing. And if you feel led to support our gardening efforts, we'd love you to do that as well. But I know you're involved in lots of things in this church, so I hope, even if you're not involved with Tia, I hope what I've said this morning encourages you with whatever you're involved in that plot of the garden that you're tending to. So thank you very much for having me. I appreciate that. And I'll hand back to Lindy. Or have we got questions? I'm happy to take. I was going to escape. Oh yeah, so they'd been given those by, I think it was a Swedish education institute, that they basically were like high level kind of hearing aids, so they would only just wear those while they were in the class just to get some kind of sound. So most of the, well, all the kids were profoundly deaf, so it would just give them some, yeah, so they would only wear those in class. Yeah, that was the question, was how do you see the political situation? Again, I was only there briefly. I mean, that was just the most frustrating thing about it all. You know, you meet the people, and most people there are just normal people trying to get on with their lives, and their country's been stuffed up by the people that are running it. And that was just really sad and frustrating to see, and you feel very helpless in the face of that. People were amazingly resilient and just getting on with life, and that was a challenge to me and encouraging. And I guess one of the things that Tia and other organisations do is that, you know, like we're working through local churches and partners on the ground, so we're kind of bypassing that level of the government stuff, which, you know, I wouldn't be wanting to give money to there either, because it probably wouldn't get to the actual projects on the ground. But very hard, very frustrating. But people were incredibly resilient and just getting on with their lives, and hopeful that next time around there might be, you know, they might get the leader they actually vote for. But it's just looking at it, it's hard to see, hard to be hopeful. But I guess you never know, and you keep praying and hoping for the best. But yeah, the church was incredible too. I was just so challenged and encouraged by how supportive they were as communities, and helping each other get through, and like I say, the positivity, and yeah, it was amazing.